Listen, I've never had any problem expressing my opinions, but what we're doing here is bigger than that. These are conversations that need to be had in an unfiltered way. Drag racing's all I've ever done. It's all I care to do. I respect the history, I appreciate how far we've come, but I want more for this sport, and I'll fight for it. It's uncut, it's unfiltered, this is the show of shows. The biggest names in drag racing. No holds barred. This is the Great American Motorsport. Drag racing. Prove me wrong, I'll wait. Hey gang, Wes Buck here, Drag Illustrated Magazine, checking in. It is Wednesday, April 26, 2023. The drag racing season's well underway, and it's hard to believe we waited this long to bring on today's guest. It seems like every time we talk to this cat, he's doing something new and exciting, and he continued that trend in 2023. A longtime friend of Drag Illustrated, been on the cover a handful of times, always making splash wherever he goes, an all-round great person and a guy who will literally drive anything with wheels, rudders, skids, whatever it has. He's more than comfortable behind the wheel. Ladies and gentlemen, my good buddy, the one, the only, Alex Laughlin. What's going on, man? You doing well?
What's up?
Hey, well, round of applause for the homie. What's up, dude?
Nice of you.
We're just tagging along down here.
Oh, yeah. Of course, everybody knows JT, Mike. What's going on, guys? Everybody good? I'm sorry. I've got to address the elephant in the room. I'm out of the studio today, so it's storming. Alex is dealing with this too. Down here in the DFW area, it's pretty nasty out. So the power's out in our office building. So I'm in the guest bedroom talking to y'all. So, anyways, awesome. Just
man, interior decoration in that room is on point too.
You like
yeah.
that?
Yeah,
I did that today. My
social media.
I did. Those photos travel with me, just so you guys know, but they're great shots. Like, in case traveling, you don't know,
traveling Walmart.
Right here. Critical. This is the first ever 3 second run by a nitrous car. Shannon Jenkins, 399 with a 2, Valdosta, Georgia.
I was there.
Drags. I was there
competing yeah. against him and being like, damn it.
And you know what the note says? I'm gonna drop an F bomb in the first 14 seconds of the show, but I'm quite proud of this. Shannon Jenkins signed it. And for those that don't know, the Iceman is my hero, is my drag racing hero. It says, Wes, to one cool motherfucker, Shannon Jenkins.
He was awesome.
And I'm like,
lying.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
No, I just think it made me feel really good. Yeah. No, it made me feel really good.
And then him everywhere he goes in case he needs to put it on.
It's
on
been
the
into multiple homes, multiple
street
places.
Head card, you know?
Hey, man, it makes me feel good. And then signed by the winner of the original World Series of Pro Mod out of Bandimere Speedway, which we've got to talk about, obviously, today. The one and the only Mike Bowman. Man. So what's good, guys? Alex, this is it unusual to have your surroundings change as frequently as they change for you? Like, you get embedded in something, and then here we go with the next new thing.
Yeah, everybody always, or especially over the last couple of years, has kind of said, you know, like, he doesn't really know what he wants to do. He can't make up his mind, you know, and I've got this awesome Drag Illustrated magazine article right here on one of my walls that says Alex Laughlin finds his identity. And that was like 3 years ago.
Well, you got your cover right there above your shoulder.
Your identity is that you want to race, regardless of what you have to race to race, right?
It's just my identity is racing, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, I don't know that you've ever lacked in identity. And like that headline, I actually remember working on that. And it's like, I think it was really about coming into your own, like as a person, because I think you and I can kind of riff on this a little bit and relate that we've spent considerable portions of our life having other people tell us what we need to be doing or where we need to be. And it feels like in the last few years, you've kind of really made racing work for you. You've done it at the rate you want to do it, the speed you want to do it, the number of events you want to do, the places you want to go and want to be. And I think that, I mean, we talked to Megan Meyer, what, 3 weeks ago? She's like a legit celebrity in drag racing, and she races top alcohol dragster. And it's no knock on top alcohol. You've done it. But it's not prime time, right? You know, but she's built a brand there. So I think the story of Alex is you'll do whatever serves what you're working on. Is that correct?
I mean, it is what you make of it, you know? And I'm kind of like dust in the wind out there, I guess, you know, I'm just like, it's blowing and going wherever it takes me. You know, yeah. Pro stock and then fell into some radio racing, 'cause that seemed cool. And then some pro mod stuff. And then, you know, one thing led to another, whether it was a situation or, you know, we'll go with situation or an opportunity, that, you know, ended up in a top fuel dragster. And then sure enough, just as I'm like finally starting to like run out of complete resources and money and hope and dreams and everything, John Dunn calls me and he's like, yo, you want to drive a funny car? And I was like, dude,
hell yes.
Would you consider a dragster? And he's like, all funny car people. So I was like, well, okay.
Do you think that, I don't want to air out dirty laundry here, but I'm going to put you on the spot, 'cause you and I had a private conversation late last year, right before all this was happening. And we were actually talking, if you remember, it was right. My dad had just was in the hospital. I was talking to you from a hallway at the hospital. And we were talking, and it still humbles me to this day that you care at all what I think about anything, but you're sharing some of your opportunities with me. And you had mentioned, again, I'm not getting you in trouble, but you're like, I think I'm going to go all in on Street Outlaws. Like, I'm going to go race No Prep Kings. Like, I think that's the best pathway forward for me. And then you said, but I just, like, that day had gotten the John Dunn, the opportunity to race a Nitro funny car. And I told you, like, I totally get it. Like, go sell 30 grand worth of merch. Like, that's hard to pass up. But, and I don't know that it would have, it definitely wouldn't have detracted from your story, would have enhanced it, but it would have been such a tragedy for the NHRA to lose you. Like, it really would have been. Do you guys agree? Like, I mean, it would have been a bad thing. Well, I mean,
we got a question down here too. A guy asking, have you won a Wally? And I think it's interesting to talk about. We call you like big race, big money Alex, and you've won some of the biggest races in Dorsal Amber Racing. Run us through your Wallys and your wins.
In all of drag racing, you won the U.S. Nationals.
Yep.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it may not be just a giant stack of them, but it is the big ones. U.S. Nationals, Lights Out. That was, to me, that was the best one. That one even beat the U.S. Nationals. Bristol Pro Stock on Father's Day with my dad there when he was traveling and helping with the program and whatnot. That one was extremely special. And then the Gator Nationals, that one, I went to the final in, I think it was 2019. Yeah, it was 2019. And all I had to do was go down the racetrack to, you know, essentially beat Bo Butner, 'cause he was just running terrible. And just, you know, sometimes when it's your day, it's just your day. And no offense to Bo, it on the track, performance wise, it wasn't his day, but just in the world of reality, it was. And smoked a push rod in the burnout and didn't even get to make a run. So he was in the final round, you know, just on a single to get the Wally, but followed up the next year, 2020, season of COVID, and ended up with the Wally there. So the Gator Nats were, that was a good one.
What about the World Door Slammer Nationals?
Of course, that one, that's the biggest trophy that I have, with this giant box of cash built into it, you know, and everybody that sees it on the trophy shelf, they're like, is that real? And I'm like duh. Yeah. Duh.
Obviously, that's why I keep it up there. Yeah. You know, so I don't spend it, it's behind lock and key. No, do you, so this far, we're only what, five races headed into the fifth race of the 2023 season. What do you make of the decision thus far? I mean, because let's face it, I mean, we've experienced this quite a bit in 2023. In the last several years, we've argued right here and in a lot of different places that it would be hard to deny that amongst the hottest properties, if not the hottest property in drag racing, is No Prep Kings. It's definitely the needle mover right now. But when you look at the sellout crowds we've had to start the 2023 NHRA Camping World season, like, are you feeling good about where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely. As well, like I have to touch on the fact that, like, it seems like all of the no prep guys are always posting stuff about their sellout crowds and, you know, like, piss on the NHRA. And then the NHRA, you know, is always posting, especially this year, all of their sellout crowds and whatnot. And it doesn't have to be like that. There's plenty of motorsports. And at the end of the day, we are all drag racing. So, you know, pipe down on that at least. But the folks at No Prep Kings do a fantastic job. And yes, I did put all of my eggs in that basket. I was kind of to the point that, like I said, I was running out of resources, money, all of it. And No Prep Kings, on the scale of what I had access to, again, resource-wise, was much more realistic. I could take the money that I have, the support and everything that I have, and go run No Prep Kings just, I mean, no holds barred, like, right, like, as hard as possible, you know. I'd show up and be like the John Force of teams out there. And they had accepted me, you know, good to go. We'd love to have you on the show. You'd be, you know, a good fit, and whatnot. And so I was ready. I was going to make the change. And I even ordered a brand new car from Larry Jeffers. Like, I was completely committed to doing this. And then that's when the funny car thing came up. And I'm just like, I start thinking, like, this is crazy. I don't know anything about funny car. I've never even considered driving a funny car. I don't watch funny car, for that matter. No offense to anybody that's in it, but, like, I was never really interested in it, probably because it's just so far out there of, like, ridiculously terrifying. I've raced everything except a bike and a boat, and the funny car stuff is just, like, even when I explain, while driving a Top Fuel car, what funny car is like, I'm like, these are the guys that, like, actually have some screws loose, you know. And then, and then I have this opportunity pop up, and I start thinking about it, you know. And, like I said, I needed to talk with my family, and, you know, I told my dad, and he was like, that's cool, but I'm not telling your mom, you have to tell it yourself. And then I told her, and you know, like, I hadn't even finished talking about it, and she's like, starts crying, and she's like, you said you would never do funny car. And I'm like, I know. And, like, but it, like, it's happening. Like, it's happening to me, you know. I'm a victim of it at this point, you know. It fell into my lap. And I said, the way that I'm looking at this is, like, if this were a dragster, this would be the absolute dream opportunity, right? Because it's like, I've got the money that I do have, which isn't enough to run a full season, but to be able to take that and join another team that does have sponsors and can finish the rest of it out and make this complete turnkey package of Nitro racing, the fact that it's a funny car is literally the only, and I'll call it downfall at the time. Now, dude, this is awesome. It's still scary. Another Drag Illustrated article that I remember and think of very often is where it said that, like, Alex is comfortable being uncomfortable. And I think that's kind of what you chase in this, right? It's like if there's a cliff, like, people that chase adrenaline, like, they want to walk close to the cliff, right? Close to the edge. Just to, like, oh, you know, that little bit of adrenaline rush. And then that never goes away. You get complacent in, you know, certainly pro stock cars, pro mod, you know, they're getting easier to drive and whatnot. And, like, this stuff, while it is hard to drive, like, it's freaking scary. Like, I don't care how many runs people have in it. Like, just watch what one of the broadcasts. And when one of them blows up, like, it happens all the time. It's like, oh, Force blew the body off again. Well, we're so desensitized to it because it happens all the time. But did you see the fireball that came from underneath that thing? I haven't experienced that, but, like, it's only a matter of time. And so, yeah, I'm kind of, like, totally running on with all of that.
No, like, it's very interesting because I remember that headline too, like, Alex Laughlin is comfortable being uncomfortable. And that was, like, you know, early on in the early days of Drag Illustrated, that was Mike and I's, like, go-to phrase. We would, like, when I'd be down, he would say that to me. And when he was down, I'd say that to him, you know, like, this is when men are made, you know? But it is interesting because you hear that from, I've never talked to anybody that hasn't given the exact same description to, like, the claustrophobia of the body lowering down.
Sitting between the tires, behind
sitting between the tires,
over top of the transmission and drive shaft. I mean, it's.
Do you think that, like, so go through, you gave us a great, we got some, I want to do licensing stories because if you remember, you told me one of the all-time, like, barn burner stories that you've ever told, I think, your pro stock licensing experience out in Sonoma. And I want to touch on that, but we can kind of start on that because you had your licensing experience with a Top Fuel car was at Wichita, which anybody watching that's ever been, Wichita is like not where you race a Top Fuel car. Like you're comfortable there in like a 10 second big tire car. You know what I mean? Like you don't want to be there in a 10 second street car. I don't think like, it's not for the faint of heart. Alex got his Top Fuel license there the week before he made his Top Fuel debut in Bandimere. What was the funny car experience? Like, I know it was out on the West Coast at a much nicer facility and like a totally different experience, I'm sure, but take us through that whole ordeal.
Yeah. The funny car licensing process fits just as well as the rest of them. It falls right in line because it was one of those times that like I'm out there at this track in the middle of nowhere, you know, and again, like no offense to the track people or anything, like it is what it is and it is what they had, but that's not the place that you want some stuff to go down. Okay. Like again, no offense to the guys that were awesome and supportive that are meeting me there at the top end, you know, after each run, but they're hopping out of the back of a flatbed dually and they're like, "Hey man, you okay?" Like, thank God. Yes. You know, like whenever when you're at an actual NHRA event where they've got, you know, EMS on the top end, on the starting line, they've got the helicopter, they've got the Leahy, you know, the automatic shutoffs and whatnot. Like, bro, I couldn't even figure out where my eyes were going to even spot the finish line down there to even take my foot off the gas pedal on time. So it's like, I really wanted to rely on like all of that safety stuff and have that, you know, at least peace of mind that there's other factors that are going to keep me safe. But you know, through the licensing, hopped in the car, shook three times, blew one up, you know, and like, it's just, that's part of the nitro stuff. And like, we just kept shaking and shaking and like, it's hard to back these cars down. If you think about it, the data that everybody has is to race or qualify, not to just stroll down the racetrack, you know, leisurely, you know, tune up. And so it's, nobody has data that's like, we're going to load this in the car that just flat out goes A to B with a soft tune up. You know, who does have that is like Dale Worsham, you know, somebody that has a car that's specifically made for licensing that runs at this very track. It's got all of this stuff that's just for licensing. So it is hard to make the car be lazy. And so we're going up there and it's like shake, shake, shake. And then, you know, John and Jim Dunn both like, all right, like we really need this license like done while you're here, you know? So if it shakes again, just pedal it. And I'm like, cool. Okay. Yeah. And so it shakes and I pedaled it. But like one of the good things about that was that I was able to like go through a lot of these other scenarios that are going to happen. And so,
what's the tire shake like? That's one of the first things I remember you doing a top end interview at one of these first few races of the year, talking about how different the tire shake is, obviously sandwiched between those tires versus in the Top Fuel car.
I think it's probably comparable to like having your hands tied behind your back in the ring with like Conor McGregor or something, like just getting your butt whooped, just bam, 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 bam. Like, well, the thing is, and like, I'm no engineer, but if you think about it, where you sit in a dragster and where the rear end of the car is, it's pretty far away. And you can even see when the cars hop up on the tire and the burnout and they kind of flex like that, right? Well, like you've got a lot of material to absorb a lot of that before it gets to you. Bro, you're sitting in a funny car on top of the rear end, you know, so when the tire's shaking, it might as well be like hitting you in the elbows and slapping you in the face at the same time. Violent is an understatement. Last year in Top Fuel, we shook in the dragster down in Houston, and it broke one of my teeth in half, a molar, just like literally broke it. I spit part of my tooth out and had to get a $2,000 crown. And with the funny car stuff now, anytime it shakes, it is like it's 10 times worse than that.
Do you wear a mouthpiece?
Yeah, I was gonna ask, you wearing a mouth guard?
So I've got one a couple of times, and I'm just like weird on new stuff, you know, and I like clenched down on it with my helmet on, and my helmet's like kind of pushing on my cheeks, and I start biting on my cheeks with it, and I just like spit it out, and I'm like, I'll do it another time, and I never do, but I definitely should.
Yeah, because I think like Brittany Force wears one. I mean, I see Cruz wears one. I've seen it seems like it's becoming more of a thing for sure, you know.
Yeah, it's necessary,
which is so fun. I mean if you really think about it, like, okay, we're at a point in time where you need to wear a mouthpiece to drive this car.
Me think of that Mel Gibson scene where, you know, I don't know, he was like a thief or something, and he's going to go ram somebody, he puts his mouthpiece in.
Yeah. And you've driven so many different types of cars now that you can kind of compare the tire shake and how these cars react in those adverse situations as much as you can just in an A to B pass as far as the driving technique. So again, I guess funny car wins in that regard as well.
100%.
What is it like? I mean, have you, and I'm big on these like existential questions or whatever, but it's and I know you're not, admittedly, not maybe a funny car fan, but you can't not be like a fan of John Force. And to see your name on that list, I would argue with anybody that, and I'm like the biggest Don Garlis fan and the biggest Don, like all, but John Force in every measurable category is the greatest of all time. And to see your name on that qualifying sheet anywhere remotely close to his, that has to be somewhat surreal, right? Like, you're still a young guy, right? Chasing the dream. That seems insane to me.
It is insane. And in every like little NHRA interview and stuff that we do at the beginning of the season and whatnot, they always ask you like all these questions. And like a lot of them have to do with like, who do you look up to and who are you a fan of and who have you watched forever? And my answer is always John Force. And, you know, talking to random strangers at the airport or on the airplane or traveling, whatever it is, you know, and they, you know, what do you do? Oh, I drive, you know, race car, you know, drag racing. Oh, cool. Like John Force. And like, now it's like,
yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, actually. And yeah. It is insane to think that somehow I have like, you know, fumble farted my way into this situation that I'm racing literally against John Force. He was in one of my quads in Vegas 2 weeks ago. You know, it's like, what the heck, man?
It has to be crazy to think that he's right down the road from you. Like that has to be, I mean, I can't even imagine. Like, I see him at the track and he'll be like, what's up, Missouri? And cause that's what he calls me.
Calls you Buck.
Yeah. He calls me Buck now. Yeah. But
I like that book you got, Buck.
But it's still weird to me. Like, I'm going, I can't believe this cat knows who I am. It's such a weird thing. I'm curious though, how does that help? Like the dream chasing we're talking about, being guilty by association with someone as recognizable as John Force, like, does that make your off season, like, did that change things? I know it was pretty late in the year when all this materialized, but that has to be meaningful to even be able to say that you race against him. Is it?
Yeah, it has a weight of its own, no doubt about it. And I will say, it seems like the support since starting the season here from fans, sponsors, everybody has like snowballed out of nowhere. People are huge fans of Funny Car, and I didn't realize it, you know, like I personally, as I've said, like I've always been a dragster person. Cause that's like what I grew up doing between super comp and top dragster and whatnot. And I just always thought dragsters were cool, but people like totally dig the funny car stuff. And it seems like sponsors actually seem to go for it a little bit more. Like it seems to have the edge, to be honest.
Didn't that, well, I mean, it probably does help though that, you know, that John Force is in that category. Yeah. Cause if he is the greatest of all time and he's the NHRA's poster boy and he's racing in funny car. So, I mean, to the casual fan, that's got to be the pinnacle. And if you think that John Force is the, you know, the
baddest, no doubt,
there's no doubt. Know, and the cars themselves are more identifiable or iconic. I mean, Top Fuel Dragster is as well, but from a branding perspective as well, if you're a company, the amount of graphics or the amount of branding you can do is more on a funny car.
You do have more. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that I've always heard that as well, that they lean that way.
I wrote an op-ed for the magazine like 100 years ago that I could make, and now I can make an argument either way, but I could make an argument for shit cannon Top Fuel, like, and just making everybody run funny car, like having one premier nitro category,
actually,
because, and this is, you know, I'm sure to those hardcore funny car fans, this is like sacrilegious and I respect that. But or canning funny car, you know, because I could make the argument either way, because I do think that to a lot of casual fans or the person walking down the street, if you say drag racing, if they have a passing interest or an ounce of knowledge about it, they probably know John Force and they probably have mentioned funny cars or have heard that. But if you're talking to someone who knows nothing, they almost always think about the long, skinny cars with the big tires and the big wing on the back, right? So it's I could make an argument either way. But when I wrote that op-ed, it was kind of rooted in the fact that if we're not going to get major support from auto manufacturers, why serve their purpose? Like if Chevy, Dodge, Ford, Toyota isn't going to like field teams – let's all run dragsters. You know what I mean? Because if we're not going to get that support and there's no need to run those logos on the car. Like in my opinion, like I get why we do it. Don't get me wrong. But if we're not going to get a bunch of support from those companies, let's just put everybody in dragsters. Because I think, and I want to talk to you a little bit about this and your support of the World Series of Pro Mod, but that in my opinion was the magic of our race, is we had all the stars in one spot on one weekend. So it was like the stars of radio racing running one class. We had all, you know, Melanie Salemi's racing Jason Scruggs, racing Jim Halsey, racing Tommy Franklin, racing Lyle Barnett, racing Jason Lee, racing Mark Mickey, every big name in door slammer drag racing, wherever they roam during the regular season is fine. But this one weekend, they're all together doing battle in the same category. And sometimes I think that NHRA drag racing, there are pros, don't get me wrong, but I do think we contend with the fact that our stars are spread across like four categories, from fun Top Fuel funny car to pro stock and pro stock motorcycle. If there was ever a way to have everybody like F1, like NASCAR, like all the guys that are competing, who won the drag race?
Like every sport.
You have to say one name. Other sport. Yeah. Do I sound like a crazy person, or can you see any logic or sense in that, Alex?
No, I mean, that totally makes sense, because there are stars within each category of drag racing. You know, you go to the duck races, Lights Out, No Mercy and whatnot. There's a lot of guys there that even people that follow NHRA, even NHRA racers themselves that have no idea who those guys are. And then there's those guys that run the outlaw stuff that have no idea who any of the NHRA people are. But when you go to their events, these people have massive followings. You know, before Stevie got like really into the NHRA pro mod stuff, you know, and was just mainly doing the outlaw stuff, like, dude, like his fan base at the outlaw races, radial tire stuff and whatnot. I mean, my perception is he was the John Force of it.
Yeah, you know? He was.
So, yeah.
I almost feel like I don't know that we get to see, like, the guy's won two championships. Like, there's no doubt about it, but it's like his success in NHRA Pro Mod, but it felt like his brand was like more palpable at the height of that Lights Out, No Mercy, Radio, going to Kennedale, or not Kennedale, like North Star Dragway, and running, you know, setting a radio record in the middle of the night, some craziness, or grudge racing this dude for an undisclosed amount of money out in Carolina at the House of Hook. Like, that was a real moment in time. And I don't know that we get to see, because that's probably a great segue for us, because like this weekend, we've got the second race of the NHRA Pro Mod Drag Racing Series coming up. And I look at how they've got 21 cars on the entry list. It looks good for the weekend. But I still feel like that deal, Stevie doesn't have as big of a platform there as he had previously, it would seem. Does that make sense?
I mean, 100%. And I'm going to say that the Outlaw stuff, I keep referring it to the Outlaw stuff and Radial and whatnot. He was like the bad boy out there, you know, like he was the top dog. And I don't know, I haven't really considered it until you started saying that, but it seems like the NHRA's kind of softened him up, you know, and not so much of him personally or anything that he's done, but maybe getting stuck a little bit in the corporate limelight, you know. I don't know, maybe he has to be a little more professional. I don't know, but like out there at the Outlaw stuff, it's like, you know, sun's out, guns out kind of thing. He's running his mouth, talking trash, and then and just kicking ass.
He had a lot of willing dance partners over there too, and that's like, he had Keith Berry and he had all these other dudes, Kevin Mullen, all these guys down the pits that would kind of play ball, you know, that would give a zinger interview, you know, would fight back a little bit, and knew what they were a part of, because like at the height of all that Donald Long promotional stuff, when it was at its peak, in my opinion, Donald was like Vince McMahon with like a whole cast of pro wrestlers, and they were all contributing in one way or another. Yeah. And everybody kind of knew their place, if they were a good guy or a bad guy. And I don't think that's nearly as defined over in NHRA. Like, we saw this deal with the staging situation last week. Like, we were blown away. Like, we had a big, big traffic week on dragillustrated.com last week, and we were blown away how many people seem to be just completely enamored with the Sean Langdon, Josh Hart, Steve Torrance staging deal. And I think I'm like reflecting on it now. I almost wonder if it wasn't the situation necessarily. It was how out of character, like, this doesn't happen. Like, you never see any of these Nitro guys say a cross word, really, like hardly ever. What'd you make of that deal?
Man. Well, I even wrote a little thing on there too, in response to one of the fans, and, you know, Sean being as, we'll just go with witty that as he is, you know, he got on there and was explaining, something about like, well, if I'm such a professional, then, and you know, how about enlighten us? And I was like, well, since you inserted yourself here, then okay, stage on time, dude. Like, it really isn't that hard, not only to do, but it also just isn't that hard to like, to say something about it. And there were a lot of fans that got on there and like had something to say as well. And they're like, oh, you Nitro drivers are crazy and whatnot. But that's why people like Street Outlaws, you know. It's like people like the drama and the combative behavior and whatnot. And, you know, I'm not out there winning races yet. So like, I kind of have to take it one step at a time with what I can say and how much I can, you know, beat on my chest out there.
You've won across other platforms though. So
To Sean's point, you know, I guess I'm not a super pro.
You're the noob
when it comes to Nitro.
Well, but, I mean, I get it. I can see both sides of it, but I do think that you're right. It's interesting because we've seen the NHRA like do their level best. You know what I mean? Like, they're doing their level best to make this happen. Do you think that like the call out deal, but that like is as cool as the concert, or in theory, you can almost tell that everybody is completely out of their element. Like, these are not people that are here to be called out or call other people out. It's super awkward. I almost think they're going to have to rethink the concept.
I personally like it, though.
I like it, but I'm just saying we've had 2 years of it now. And in my opinion, it's yet to produce. Name who won it?
Yeah, they're probably looking.
Who won it? Who won it?
I don't know.
Okay, that's what I thought. So
but they're probably looking for that one clip, that one spotlight, or the where the rivalry starts. I mean, that's what they're looking for, right? They're looking for someone to say something that someone else kind of takes offense to, and now we've got.
I think they're going to have to make the matches, though. Like, I go back like to World Series of Pro Mod Rivals Night. We did the matchmaking, and I think that we wouldn't have gotten any of those matchups if we left these guys to do it themselves.
100%.
There's so many, like, because we talk about it. I mean what I say when I say that drag racing, this community is, I believe, the greatest group of people that I've ever been around. Of course, you can find an exception to that, of course. But I mean, if you think about this community as a whole and their willingness to help and like, and how big it is and how tight it remains, this is a special group of people. And you're really asking a lot of them. Like, Stevie Jackson is an outlier. Like, the guy that's willing to call everybody out, those guys are few and far between. So I feel like if we would have left, we had 61 pro mods in Bradenton, and if we would have left it up to them to set up races, like, Jay Cox probably would have got a race. Lyle Barnett probably would have got a race.
J.R. Gray.
J.R. Gray would have got a race. But I can't think of anybody else, you know, because they're Palmer respectful.
Palmer probably would have. Yeah.
Yeah, but Scott is another guy that is, like, very humble as the day is long, will do anything for anybody. And, you know, I don't see Scott, like, calling a bunch of people out. So we had to be the matchmakers. You know what I mean? And, but like, if I'm NHRA, I'm thinking to next season's call out, and I'm going Sean Langdon and Josh Hart for $50,000 at the Gator Nationals, and I'm booking a ticket now. You know what I mean? Like, I would go just to see that race because there's something to build on because it happened organically, right? This moment, that soundbite you're talking about, T, we got it.
Yeah.
We got some tension. And so now, as promoters, in my opinion, you got to build on that. Now you go to work. Because we did.
Got to water.
Yeah, you got to water. Because, I mean, yeah. Because, you know, running our social media and stuff, I'm like, we got to post a quote from Sean. We got to get a quote out here from Josh. We've got to, because sometimes I feel bad about it because I don't mean to stir the pot, but it's also our job to stir the pot to some extent, especially when it's good, clean drama. Like, we're so blessed as a sport that I'm not having to air out some nastiness. Like, this is just a product of our sport. It happens. Everybody's entitled to their opinion on it, and we can stir the pot and kind of get people talking about it, and it works. I mean, I think that there's a rivalry in the making between Josh Hart and Sean Langdon. And as a sport, if we had brains in our heads, yeah, we could build on that. You know, like, it's going to be more interesting. Like, if the good Lord gave us a Sean Langdon, Josh Hart final in the coming weeks or months, it will be significant because of that. You know, just my opinion. Parks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you completely. And to the like promoter aspect of it, and like putting up some money for the race, like that's where NHRA has to kind of look at stuff like that as it's an investment, right? You're investing on the fact that more people are going to watch, more people are going to come, more people are going to feel personally invested because they are a fan of one person or the other, you know, and now they have to see.
Yeah. It's something they've got to adjust to as well. Like, NHRA has been around a long time. They say a big ship turns slow, and it's the way the world is, social media, the way what people are drawn to as far as entertainment has changed. And I think NHRA is slowly adapting to that, but it's still sort of the old guard, still kind of rooted in the 1950s, you know, the car's the star, safety first, that's a safe place to race, all the things that NHRA was built on. So I think it's going to take time, but it's speaking of old guard and people that have been around a long time, I'm curious, what's it been like working with Jim Dunn? I think it's interesting to see him in his age, you know, still out there telling you to start the burnout and pulling you into the beams and all that stuff. Like what kind of melding has happened between someone of his age and experience and someone of your age and of your generation?
Yeah, it's awesome because the age gap obviously is substantial, and the things that he's seen and done, you know, he's won more races than I've ever been entered in. He's won more races than I've ever even seen in person. You know, he's got a story for everything, and just the amount of knowledge and experience that he has is, it's awesome to be around, to see him, you know, out on the starting line, you know, adjusting the idle, and like he's there to start the car, and the guy still does so much. Not only does he tune the car and essentially run the entire program, but you know, he's still in the trailer and he's putting connecting rods and pistons together. He's washing parts. He's rolling bearings into everything and greasing everything up. Like his involvement, he is probably the most integral team member of the entire operation. You know, and to kind of compare it to how we've been talking about John Force, it would be like anybody that gets to hop in the seat of John Force's funny car 20 years from now, right? And it's Force that's the one that's out there that tells, you know, that brings you into the water box and whatnot. It's a blast from the past. And some of his partners that I've just been lucky enough to ride along with, like Moon Eyes, like it's awesome. The history there, and everything that he's done is so far beyond unrecognized. People still come to the ropes every weekend with die cast and things that they've been hauling around that they want him specifically to sign. He's got a heck of a following for sure.
Is he like, he's intimidating to me though, like watching him from afar, I'm like, oh, I don't know, dude, he scares me pretty bad, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, he kind of has that perception. I felt the same way at first, and he's so funny about how he like gets after me about some things. And in the very beginning, he's like, I get mad and I yell at people, but I get over it pretty quick. I'm like, oh man, I don't really dig that too much, because I grew up with my dad yelling at me, right? And somebody yells at me these days, I'm immediately just like my guard's up and I'm furious, I'll quit, you know. But he hasn't yelled at me at all. But it is funny, you know, like there was, you know, we look back to Phoenix and nobody's making runs out at Phoenix, especially in funny car. And you know, car gets to half track and gets all wonky on me, you know, and I lift and we go back, and he always says if it's my fault he'll let me know, and if it's his fault he'll admit it. And he brings me over and he says, Alex, he said, this one's your fault. I said, okay, well, what'd I do? He said, well, you drove it out of the groove. And I said, okay, like, you know, can we elaborate on this, you know, like what was going on? And he says that the power came in and you weren't ready for it, and it pushed you out of the groove. And I said, okay, so, and I don't have any runs to compare this to at this point other than like Gainesville, the prior race where we went, you know, 399 at 320 miles an hour. Okay, pretty good run, especially for, you know, for my first time. And I said, well, how does that compare to Gainesville? And he looks over at the computer and he looks back at me and he says, Alex, my mother could have driven at Gainesville. I was like, all right, dude. Well, it doesn't answer my question, but I will do better.
Oh man, that's good. My mother could have driven at Gainesville. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, you know, obviously the technical and on-track stuff, but you mentioned Moon Eyes and some of these partners that he's had for decades, and you're kind of a sponsorship guy as well, you know, and have a lot of experience getting these companies on board with you. Have you guys talked about that, or like how has his approach differed from yours, or have you guys talked shop on marketing and sponsorship and all that?
It has been one step at a time, and that one is in queue and on deck. John and I have had some conversations about tactics and whatnot and different approaches. And John, for the most part, is completely responsible for all of the sponsorship stuff. He's got an awesome canvas and platform to build on with Jim Dunn Racing, obviously, and everything that they've done. And he's a closer, man. He's a heck of a businessman. And one thing that I appreciate that he does that I have never not only had the courage to do, but haven't really had the means to do, is anybody that offers me anything, big or small, usually small, I just have to say yes, because I gotta have it. And I have to have all these little things to make one big thing. And the smaller things for him, he's like, nah, like we don't have to have this. It's actually better for you to join us than it is for us to join you, you know? And he can say no to deals, and kind of watching him like literally grab the bull by the horns in a lot of these scenarios, I'm just like, man, it's pretty awesome to be able to handle it that way. But they've got, you know, they've paid their dues, right? They've been there, they've done that, they've got the t-shirt. At this point, it's like, look, if you want to work with us, great. If you don't, there's somebody behind you, you know, that does.
I think that Mike and I talk about that. Like that, it's the ultimate like dynamic changer is when you are in a position to be able to say no. And because I've lived a very similar existence where it's like, yeah, whatever you want, we will do whatever you want, you know? And, but then as things evolve, it's important to be working towards getting to that place where it's like, no, I want to pick and choose the people that I work with. I want to pick and choose the people that see value in what we do or want to be associated with what we do. And when someone doesn't, no problem. You know
sometimes,
what I mean?
Sometimes you work harder for those small deals than you probably would a big deal. You
know, that's the story of my life.
You go sell a house, you know, it's easier to sell a $400,000 house than it is a $50,000 house because you can never get this damn thing closed, or, you know, but I mean, it really is. Those people expect more. It's like they want to run a full page ad in a 6-page spot, right? I mean, we've dealt with that a million times.
Yeah. Everybody wants everything for nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just saw this comment on here. That No Prep Kings was going to run $50,000 a race. I think Kevin Stevenson said here, and then they're doing a team thing for points. And then whoever has the most points on your team then gets another at the end of the season, gets $250,000.
That's a pretty good payday.
What do you make of the payout? Like how much of what's happening over at MPK, like versus the NHRA, like, do you think payouts and all that is driving the bus, or do you think that it's more about being famous, being a celebrity, selling merch? Like, what do you think from a racer? Well, yeah, but like, what do you think is the biggest motivating factor for someone to pursue that line of work as a racer?
For the smaller guy, like No Prep Kings is the better look, you know. As far as payouts go, still in relation to the smaller teams, racers and whatnot, the payouts do matter, right? Because, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but there's plenty of guys in Nitro categories, both, that go to the races, have a good time with their buddies. They're running a Nitro car, but they completely rely on that qualifying money, right? They're showing up to get that qualifying money. The big teams, you know, like JFR, Kalita, those guys and whatnot, the purse money doesn't matter, you know, and I'm speaking on their behalf. Like I actually know, this is just my perception of it. The purse money is just a bonus. They have the money that they need from their sponsors and partners and everything. And anything that they win is just a bonus. And a lot of the times it does just go to like the crew guys as a bonus for, you know, their performance. You look over to No Prep Kings, the payouts help the racers, yes, of course. Often the bigger guys win and end up with all of the money anyways. But it also helps the following, right? Just like you said, JT, they're showing what the payouts are. They're advertising, you know, it's 50 grand per race. What makes the people that watch this stuff feel like, man, these payouts are so big that like, this is a big deal. Who's going to win 50K this weekend? You know, Fuel pays out 50K and it's never talked about because it doesn't really matter. There's to run Fuel, it costs millions and millions of dollars a year. So
it pales in comparison. What
kind of like amortized. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but then like the No Prep Kings guys, like they get paid to show up, and depending on what level of celebrity you are on the show is the amount of money that you get paid. So if you're a Ryan Martin, you get a lot, right? And if you're a Chuck, you know, you get this much. And if you're, you know, so-and-so down the list, you just get very, very little. And it's the guys that get paid very little that don't run as good. So like Ryan, he's getting all the money to show up. Well, now he's got more money to spend on the best parts and the best people. And now he's winning the purse money. So that's how it just like, it just snowballs.
Do you think that part of me wonders though, is there like a point where, I mean, like, I think that the Street Outlaws No Prep Kings story is like, I'm seeing comments about, you know, these guys working on their own cars and break, you know, busting knuckles between rounds. And I know that that happens, but I mean, let's, you know, we had it mentioned on the show last week, like Steve Petty tunes Ryan Martin's car. Like this guy is a god of crew chiefs. I mean, he was the Drag Illustrated Crew Chief of the Year last year. This guy's like an all time great crew chief. At what point, like if No Prep Kings is all about like relatability and, you know, being regular guys, well, shit, man, you win. Ryan Martin, like Ryan Martin's not a regular guy anymore.
He's the fourth man. Like he's got all of it. He has the best people, the best parts. And, you know, like just to say it for what it is, like he almost like he has his own set of rules too. You know, there was a time last year where he had one of one pro chargers in the world with no boost limit, right? That they like he's untouchable. And so, you know, I mean, it's like I do love what they're doing and everything. And I don't mean anything, you know, to talk bad about them, but they kind of work the rules around, you know, the show. At the end of the day, they tell you straight up front, this is a TV show. Number one, it's for entertainment. Number two, it's a race. And so whatever is best for the show in general, you know, it's what they do.
Hey, we've got a comment here from Billy Carroll that I'm interested to get your opinion on, Alex, as far as the apparel fees at NHRA versus No Prep Kings or Street Outlaws. And as far as my understanding, they do. And you cannot sell your own apparel. You have to sell it out of a trailer on the Midway, which Alex, I think you've done very well as far as getting your merchandise into these trailers and running your own deal. But as far as Street Outlaws, they don't take a cut as far as I understand, right? Everybody's running the merch out of their own trailer and it's completely hands off from Street Outlaws.
Yeah. The production crew actually helps these guys sell shirts, you know, like these folks have stanchions set up and the drivers are out at this time. They're going to sign the shirts. They've got their table set up and they've got stanchions like you're in security at the airport where people are just zigzagging back and forth to buy their favorite driver's shirts. The drivers stand there, you know, take their picture next and they just like strain them through and the producers, the show like helps them facilitate that. And no, they don't take a cut because they make plenty of money from the TV show and they're happy with the live events and everything that they've got going on. NHRA, I could just say so many bad things about
that's what I was trying to get you to say. Let's go with it.
But what about just some like real facts? Like, because I'll give a few. Like, you got to be at every race or whatever. You got to be at a minimum amount of races.
Yeah.
So you're paying for a vendor spot at what, a minimum of 14 or something? It used to be. I don't know.
It's almost $3,000 to park my trailer before we sell one single T-shirt. And then we still have to pay 20% to NHRA, and that's the gross sales. That's not even net. So really the margins that NHRA makes for doing literally nothing.
They make more than you after by the time you pay for someone to set in there.
Oh, it's
your
honest,
fuel, your trailer, the
it's
parking.
Not worth doing.
Have them made, the design no. work. Yeah, no. like
it's not
yeah,
even
yeah,
worth
it's
doing.
Like paying. It's like paying taxes.
It's yeah, going to be so hard for anyone to overcome that unless you're a John Force, unless you're a Don Schumacher, one of these big teams that can probably outrun those expenses. But and you've done very well with the hot. That's what I was mentioning earlier. The Hot Wheels stuff, the items that people will want to buy versus like these smaller teams. We see these trailers where it's got like 10 of the smaller drivers all on one drivers, trailer yeah. because that's the only way to make it happen. I mean, what's your opinion? Is that something NHRA needs to take a look at in today's times or like what's their, what's your take on it as far as their stance and the fact that they, despite, you know, all these other organizations going a different direction, that they still do that?
Yeah, they need to take a better look at it for sure. And just not have their hand out for so much, you know, they just take and take and take and take. And I love NHRA. I'm thankful for them and everything that they do because it's a place to race and it is what we do. But as far as what they do politically, man, they are just, it's an organization of folks that have tons of opportunities to put more money in their personal pocket and get away with it, you know? So
this just, I mean, there was a comment earlier.
This just happened in the PGA, you know, like, yeah, the players got sick of the PGA just taking and taking and taking and taking. And so when this new, you know, the LIV Tour came up, a bunch of them went. And now the PGA, I mean, this last weekend was crazy numbers, you know, for the LIV Tour in Australia, and the PGA not so much. So, I mean, we've seen it happen in other sports where they eventually get fed up with it.
Yeah, and it's not just apparel. It's the manufacturers Midway also. Wes tells a story a lot, and I can remember being a kid going to races, like going to the Midway was about the coolest thing. I mean, seeing all the parts, all the toys, everything for sale.
Die cast for days.
Yeah, and now there's none of that. I mean, the Midway is really just like your major sponsors with displays and things like that. So
they're yeah. Well, I want to say first and foremost, thank you for playing it. Like, because these conversations, like, we all kind of get tense and clinch a little bit. You know what I mean? Because we've got to operate in this world and we're going to see people, you know, and all these. But we have to be willing to have, like, if we have to be willing to have some of these conversations in an open fashion, because these are the conversations that will. I say a lot of times that what I feel we do at Drag Illustrated that I'm especially proud of is we kickstart conversations. And I see when we kickstart a conversation, sometimes it happens years later, sometimes it happens a few weeks later, but I will see something happen or I will see a decision be made and I'll go, we started that conversation. We got the ball rolling on that. And I'm proud of that. And so I think these things have to be talked about because for me, when I think about it, I do think that's one of these classic can't see the forest for the trees moments. Like the biggest issue that I see right now is the pathway to success in the NHRA pro ranks is so overwhelmingly difficult. Like it's overwhelmingly difficult to be successful in drag racing at virtually any level. But when you get Top Fuel, Funny Car, pro stock bike, pro mod, I mean, it's a mountain to climb. And we have the NHRA, I feel, as they move forward, no matter what people think about, because people, the NHRA at its core is a nonprofit, but don't think there isn't a second NHRA business that is a for-profit events business. And I know this for a fact, and it is a known fact. And so if they want to continue forward and like be fruitful in the future, I think they've got to find a pathway to make allow their competitors some way to win. You know what I mean? Like, how can I mean, we all know.
Not even really competitors. Like, you know, they're the people, the stars of their show.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I used to always joke that it used to always be prior to YouTube and social media and all this, like the only way to get any ink was to win, very hard to do, or wreck real bad, which you typically would like to avoid, you know? And so it's a real conundrum because I'm thinking about it through the lens of like Alex Laughlin or like if you were a privateer team owner, let Scott Palmer is a great example. Like I don't know how he makes going to Charlotte make sense. Like when you think about the merch, Scott's got a following, right? But he can't justify or afford to have a trailer on the Midway. You know what I mean? He's got to try to partner with somebody to sling some merch out of their trailer. So then it's watered down as well. How does a guy like that make it make sense? I mean, the show up money is not enough to be extremely meaningful, especially with diesel prices and travel and hotels and everything as high as it is right now. Like, I feel like that's the problem that NHRA has to solve as we move forward is you can't even allow Alex Laughlin, in my opinion, you can't allow someone like Alex Laughlin to even consider going racing somewhere else. But like,
that comes back to purses, like we were talking. And, you know, and there's a reason why that NASCAR and, you know, horse racing and all these other events, you know, they'll like break it down, like how much you make through, you know, the top to the top 20 or the top 30 in some of these deals, or the, you know, how much the winner of the Kentucky Derby made. You know, they brag on that because it makes it such a bigger deal. Like, hey, this shit's serious. You know, you better pay attention.
Yeah, there's a lot at stake.
Yeah.
I mean, because if you think about that, the stakes matter. And the reason the NHRA doesn't talk about payouts typically is because those numbers are not flattering, right? No. Like, I've seen them multiple times shy away from that. Like, the last thing they want to do is talk about payouts because it doesn't paint our sport in a positive light at all, which is a problem of many. Because here's the thing, they do so many things right. And I'm not trying to be that guy. Like, it's the premier place to race. Big crowds. I mean, if you are at Gainesville, that was completely batshit crazy. Like, it was almost intimidating how many people were there, right? But I know how many millions of dollars were made in ticket sales. How does that race not pay $250,000 to win?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know?
And we know that it cost $100,000 at minimum to run the race in a nitro car, and you're going to win 50. So it's like, you know, people that don't understand cost or even, you know, why even care to get into any of that. But like Street Outlaws, it's like there's $50,000, you know, up for grabs. And like, that's a lot of money, especially for something of that caliber. But it's like, well, why would you spend $100 to go and risk making 50?
Yeah, well, I think that No Prep King still looks attainable and looks like real cars, and it gives that impression of, man, they're out there racing these cars that could be street cars or have run on the street in some cases for $50,000. That's a big deal. But yeah, then when you go like on the NHRA broadcast and somebody blows a body off and they talk about how much that body was,
that was 80, man.
The check doesn't even cover that body. It's like, it kind of gives you pause. And that's why I think obviously
it kind of makes us all look like fools. Well, I mean, I'm not trying to say that, you know, mean, but
no, you're
you
right.
Well, I mean, that's
why the hell would you go do that?
Ask all the time, like, well, what do you do it for?
And why the hell can't you get paid? You know,
because that's the only thing you can say
when you're at the pinnacle.
Oh, no, I mean, it's,
why the hell can't you get paid if you're the professional? You're the cream of the crop. You know, there's no sense of it, really.
Well, I think somebody like Alex, though, is a good example of like trying to change the dynamic and trying to work, you know, swim upstream almost to change this system, because it used to be different. I mean, it used to, a person like Alex or a privateer could put together a career, go match racing, sell enough merch, do enough independent things. The costs were not exorbitant to where you could make it make sense, even if you weren't a super team. And now it's just, I mean, it's damn near impossible. And, you know, kudos to guys like you out there fighting the good fight, but it's a tough road to hoe, man. And it's sort of, everything's all in on the big teams, the super teams, and the whole system has been built around that.
It's tough. And I mean, I agree, like, volunteers can't be victims. We're all willing participants in this. And I feel like when things are good, we're the first ones to like clap and cheer and rant and rave and celebrate, you know? But we can't be afraid of having critical conversations. Like, the NFL is crucified at every turn. You know, the NBA is constantly, you know, under a microscope. I mean, this is what heavy is the head that wears the crown, right? I mean, the NHRA is our sports major league. So I feel that they have to be, they're susceptible to this type of, you know, conversation. And I really don't think it's not nastiness or anything like that. That's, they're the hottest. They're those, not hot.
Everybody you just mentioned there, though, is more transparent than the NHRA.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's crazy to think that the NFL, the NBA, that, you know, the commissioner, you know, they're more transparent than what we get from the NHRA.
No, that's, I agree. You know,
we're going to get Alex called into the principal's office.
Yeah.
Bring those waiters, man, because it's going to get deep one way or the other.
I mean, hey, and like I said, I think these conversations are healthy because here's the thing, man. Nobody wants it to be successful more than like everybody on the screen right here, you know, like we, and I know that it is successful and it's, I think there's a lot of, but what we, the difference for me is not being satisfied with where we are as a sport versus maintaining the status quo. Like those are completely different belief systems. Like you can be married to the notion of like, hey, we just got to keep doing what we're doing. You know, it's worked. So we'll just keep doing this and hope nothing goes wrong or goes awry. Hope there's not another global pandemic or whatever. But I think that over here, like I want to see us move forward. Like I'm not, as you guys hear me say every week in the opening of the show, like I'm grateful for where we are. I'm proud of how far we have come as a sport. I mean, I think about people racing on abandoned airstrips in the late 50s and whatnot, and where we're at now, I'm super proud. I mean, 4 wide drag strips, multi-million dollar facilities and whatnot. It's an incredible thing that our sport, drag racing, has achieved, the great American motorsport, undoubtedly in my mind. But I think there's more out there for us. And that's what drives this for me. And it's, I don't want a bigger slice of the pie. I want the pie bigger for everyone. Because I don't want people like Alex Laughlin to go bass fishing, right? I don't want people to throw in the towel or go, you know what? There may be something else that I should pursue. I want to find a way to make it work. And I think the only way we're ever going to achieve that is by asking questions, having conversations, having open ears. I hear it all the time from people in the sales world, and we do this all the time. You have to find out, like, it's a needs analysis. And I'd like to ask this right now. Like, so one of the things that I've felt maybe NHRA should consider doing is like run through the pits and spend months doing this. You're not going to be able to do it in a Saturday at, you know, during a rainout, but like have sit down conversations one-on-one, because group settings are difficult for people. You know, you put Alex Laughlin in a room with John Force and Alan Johnson and Richard Freeman and all these guys that have big personalities and have, you know, championships and millions of dollars. And it's pretty hard to like pipe up and say anything. But if you had like real meaningful conversations with all your stakeholders over the course of time and really ask them like, hey, how can we help you? How can we make this deal work for you? And it needs to be known, like there's got to be enough to go around. I had a conversation with a guy yesterday that our sport, what's the word? We hate success stories to some extent. Like I remember how like Donald Long was everybody's best friend, but then he started to have visible success and that started to wane, right? Because it's like bad news to be successful as a race promoter. You know, and that can't be the case. So the NHRA, we need them to make money, a bunch of it. I think we all want them to make money, but we all need to be a part of that ecosystem. So I guess I'm asking you now, Alex, like if we were having a sit down conversation at an NHRA race or whatever, or maybe reflecting on the last couple of seasons that you've had racing at our sport's highest level, like how could we, if I was the NHRA and I'm sitting down with you, like how could we better serve you? Or what could we do? What changes could we make? What opportunities could we present to make it give you the best opportunity to succeed?
Oh man, where to even start? You know, it's a long list. You know, over the last several years, they just continue to take away from the payouts. and don't have any explanation other than we're just taking it. You know, there's been a lot of the folks, even within the pro committee, that ask, well, like, where's the money going? And they don't have an answer. They don't do anything to, they have so many things that are like right at their fingertips that they can use and utilize that they don't. Right. I did notice, you know, they just put this deal out, with the movers and shakers and deal makers in the last issue of National Dragster, which I was very thankful to be a part of. And then what they ended up doing, even though it was like close to a week late, is they sent some graphics for everybody that was in it to post. Right. And like, these people that are in these articles are certainly going to post it because it's cool and it's a good feature and it's something to be proud of. And so that's, and I don't even know if that's completely what they were after by doing it, but it is one thing that worked to their advantage. But then they sent these graphics out, you know, if you would post it and whatnot. And, you know, you've got like Lindsay Snyder from In-N-Out, and you've got other people that are not necessarily in NHRA racing, but drag racing as a whole. You've got Cletus McFarland, you know, he's got a huge following these days, and they send this stuff out, like post it. So now it goes to all of their audiences, you know, something as simple as we're on the Jumbotron, every single pair of cars that comes up on the starting line. And I wrote in 2017 saying like, why not put our social media handles up there? Because the more that you make us a star and get us followers, we have better opportunities at sponsorships. The more of a celebrity we appear to be, right? Perception is reality. Like, what does that cost to put it up there? Nothing. And if you have tens of thousands of people in the stands already with their phones out because they're wanting to video and everything, let them look us up, right? Type it in. This is what it is. Instagram, Facebook, whatever. And hit the follow button. And then it helps really grow the stars. Formula Drift, they've been doing this since at least 2015. And they're barely even on TV. They call it drift racing and they don't even race. And these guys have multi mega 100,000 followers and fan bases and whatnot. There's so many things, you know. I think it was Charlotte of last year. I'd been running a bunch of the Street Outlaws races, No Prep Kings, and one of the NHRA marketing guys stopped by the trailer and wanted to talk No Prep Kings. And he says, we know that you've been doing this a lot and we have kind of put it off for a long time and kind of, you know, pushed back and whatnot, but we'd like to hear from you maybe some things that they do that we could implement because they are doing so well. And I thought, man, how humble of you, you know, like this is awesome. You're finally coming around. And literally never heard from any of them ever again. That was it.
Well, I mean, and the effort is worth something, yeah. Right? I mean, and you know, and those graphics and things like that, like that sounds familiar. But it's like
those lists, man. That's a good idea, Wes.
Yeah.
He would have a movers and shakers section in our magazine.
Right? No, it's all good. It's all good.
Jim Park says we're going to find out Friday if our hard cards have been invalidated.
Yeah, it's all good. But what do they say? Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. It's all good. But hey, I appreciate that. And I mean, it's cool that they're even willing to have some of those conversations. And I've heard about more and more of those conversations happening. And to Mike's point earlier in the show, that it's a big boat, the biggest boat in drag racing. It's going to take some time. I mean, and you've got some deep rooted belief systems there. You've got some people that have been around for a long time. And I saw a comment earlier, like when I said that no one likes the success story, it's that kind of classic. Everyone hates a winner. You know what I mean? Like everybody hates the Yankees, right? Because they win all the time. You know what I mean? And the point I was simply trying to make is, I'm not suggesting that the NHRA needs to like give it all away or take some big L. You know what I mean? We need successful promoters. We need successful tracks. That's a huge, perhaps one of the most important parts of this whole puzzle. But I do think there needs to be I said this when I was like losing my mind Saturday night at the World Series of ProMod, giving this big speech.
Oh no! Don't. But, yeah, we got to start shut a up. Separate show about that.
Yeah, no. But I was. It was a moment in time. It was electric. But I think racers oftentimes don't feel, and this is like across the board. I truly believe racers oftentimes don't feel like they're in an equally yoked relationship. It's like a marriage. You know what I mean? It's give and take, you know? And sometimes it's the pendulum's going to swing way one way. You know what I mean? But it needs to swing back the other way at some point. And I really think that that's the root of this, is that just across the board, racers have long since felt like they're carrying the water, you know, and it's okay. Nobody needs to be the villain. Nobody needs to be the bad guy. My point is just like, let's work on fixing that. Let's work on bridging the gap, because you can't tell me.
Let's be fair.
Let's just be fair.
Let's just be fair.
Because, and I see both sides of it. I really do. And I mean, we talk about it all the time. Like I've seen comments like, oh, the racers paid the purse at the World Series of ProMud, right? Because our entry fee was high and it was done that way on purpose. And I'm not ashamed of it nor bashful about it. But the race cost $500,000, right? That's how much the race cost to put on, $500,000. So $100,000 is like a real small piece of the puzzle, unfortunately. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm just saying that everybody needs to be invested. You know what I mean? I don't think racers shouldn't be invested. Matter of fact, I think, unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, where our sport's at, we're not PGA. We're not LIV Golf. We're not NBA. It is what it is. I think racers need to be invested, because our sport is more than a plane ticket. It's more than checking your clubs. You know, it's hauling a truck and trailer across the country, right? I mean, it is tens of thousands of dollars in diesel fuel, and it's pretty easy for a race team owner to say, man,
shit's tight
going.
Right now. Yeah,
it's tight right now. I ain't going. You know, eggs are up, you know. But I mean, and so racers, I do feel, need to be invested. They need to be committed. And sometimes that means they need to be invested financially. So I'm not against that. But again, it needs to be an equally yoked relationship. And I mean, I do think across the board, I mean, Mark Caruso's in the comments right now talking about how he feels Glenn Cromwell is the best president the NHRA has had since Wally Parks. And I would support that. I've never seen a NHRA executive ever more willing to like offer an ear, have a conversation, ask questions or whatever. But sometimes, and I mean, I'm probably talking out of turn here, but I think he's like hamstrung. Like, I don't know how, you know, he's dealing with a board and lawyers and all these powers that be. And I don't oftentimes know that, like, I don't know that he could have a conversation with you, which may be part of the problem, you know, is it's like he has a conversation with Alex Laughlin about what they could apply from the no prep deal to this. Well, he can't like snap his fingers and make that happen, you know, which is a problem, you know, in my opinion. Going back real quick to the Street Outlaws deal and No Prep Kings, how making money on the back of the series, it seems to me that they're like completely comfortable with that. They want, did you experience that? Like, they want their guys to be stars. Yeah, I mean, like, they want you guys to be successful. I mean, obviously they're making a bunch of money and all those things, but like, what was that experience like just seeing them? Cause they need you guys to be stars so people watch the show and buy tickets to the event.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, the first thing that goes with being set out there is that this is a TV show and that comes first. And the drivers are characters, right? And there are a lot of times that, you know, that the reason that they get into these, you know, combative scenarios and whatnot are because the producers make them, right? So, you know, sometimes they're staged. At the end of the day, you know, there's several of them that are just a bunch of hillbillies that like fighting also, you know, and they're just willing to do it on their own. But they do understand that without these characters, that they don't have anything, and that the people that come to these races want to see their characters, their heroes. They feel invested in these people. They feel like they know Ryan Martin because they video from his shop and behind the scenes, and they see, you know, his wife or girlfriend or like their kids and everything. Like, there's so much of the behind the scenes scenarios that these people that watch think that they have a backstage pass into these racers' lives. And I think that's what differentiates like the NHRA stuff versus the Street Outlaws stuff. They just do a much, much better job of illustrating who these people are and making, you know, the viewer feel just extremely invested.
You're kind of working on something like that, aren't you?
Yeah.
How you mean?
You working on a little project, yeah, aren't you?
Like video stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Working on, I'm launching a new YouTube series soon. I've got almost 5 videos complete and staged up that I'm going to probably pump all out within the same week or so. And then it'll, you know, if everything goes well, try to do one a week for as long as I can. But yeah, it's called Anything Fast, Anything Fun. And I've rebranded my actual YouTube that was just under my name as Anything Fast, Anything Fun. I figured it'd just be better. I've got a couple thousand subscribers on there. I've really neglected YouTube for a long time.
We did too.
For whatever reason, you know, it's tough. Like it's hard to take the time and go out and shoot something first to come up with an idea of what would somebody want to see, you know? And it's really not going to be so much for drag racing, you know, believe it or not. It's literally Anything Fast, Anything Fun. It does have drag racing.
A lot of your following though is, I mean, they're used to that from you, right? I mean,
right.
I mean, you're rescuing a horse. You got a disco.
But I mean, you're
racing side by side. You're on a go-kart, you know, I mean, you're in a tractor, right? It's 40 into the field, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
But that's to your point you just made. That's what folks want to see.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they want to see you. They're going to see you drag race, right? At the next event. They want to see you they watch on TV or whatever. They want to see the other stuff that happens when they're, you know, typically aren't cameras rolling. How surprised are you by the undertaking that is? Like, so sometimes I think people see, like, it's easy to be jealous of like a Cletus McFarland and some of these guys that have these huge followings on YouTube, but you don't have to spend much time around those people to see the effort and energy that goes into that and the expense. Have you been surprised by the undertaking that it is?
It's a lot of work, you know, and I've got one full-time videographer now that's doing, you know, 99% of the shooting and editing. All of my videos that I've had in the past, I've done myself, and it's a huge undertaking on top of the fact that, you know, like look at Cletus and what he does, whether it's the hovercraft or a car, like these are big investments. And while the show that everybody gets to see is awesome and it's exciting and it's super easy, like you said, to be jealous of like, oh, he's got all this stuff, right? And he's just making these awesome episodes. Well, there's a lot that goes into that. There's a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of commitment, as well as the fact that like, it's not all glamorous. You know, I just built a giant bowling ball cannon and and that's going to be on one of the videos, and welding that thing out, like that took some time. You know, like I'm in my shop sweating, throwing sparks, you know, the Corvette, it's sitting over
like
the
a gun gunpowder type just cannon.
I'm not releasing how
information
how it's propelled. Catapult. Yeah, and yeah. I'm not even putting that in the episode because I just, you know, safety, you know, is still part of it.
Crazy, in reality, man. I even say we want to see the unsafe video. Shit. You know,
well, like I even say in the video, like don't try this at home. Like I'm not a professional, but I'm more professional than you are at this, and I'm doing this here now, so you don't have to.
That was like, whatever they say, don't do this at home. When I was younger, it was like, oh yeah, I'm going to do it.
I'm going to try that.
We could tell. We would never guess that, JT. Hey, Kevin Stevenson says that YouTube is hard. He's finding it more difficult than other platforms to get a following. But I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on the content or your audience or what, but it seems like YouTube is the last frontier that hasn't been screwed up by algorithms.
They kind of cut back too, right? So
yeah, and then, I mean, TikTok they're all hard. But YouTube to me seems like the last place where you can build, still put out good content. It'll reach your audience, and it isn't so heavily weighed down with this algorithm crap like these.
It's
other
funny though because
are.
We all complain though because we're like, God dang it, I can't get my YouTube following up because another platform, you know, cuts you off at the knees if you try to post anything about it. So you're like trying to send everybody from one platform or to the other, and they're going, hell no.
You can't get them there.
Yeah, sending people to YouTube from somewhere else seems to be the hardest part. But once you do get people there subscribed and getting the notifications and stuff, it'll snowball from there.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be personality. You got to be doing something that people want to see. And yes, it's extremely competitive. There's literally everything out there from cooking shows to camping and fishing, you know, now one with the bowling ball cannon. So it's just,
I'm blown away by the amount of automotive content.
See what he did there? He's blown away.
I'm blown away by the amount of automotive content that's on YouTube. It's just like, how many, it's hard to believe that there are like this many people with twin turbo Camaros and Corvettes, and
you can look
everything's
up like
boosted,
Raptor versus whatever, or you know, I mean, you can look up almost anything.
Tesla, everything. They're drag racing Teslas.
You can be trying to take your dash out in your brand new truck, and there's somebody's got a video here on exactly how to do it, so you don't break the clips. You know? I mean, it's got everything. I fixed freaking TV and a stove there last year, I think.
Oh, I fixed a washing machine recently. I did. Yeah, I mean, well, I contributed to the fixing of a washing machine. JT, oh my goodness, man. What a prick you are. He's always bagging on me. Always bagging on me, man. No, well, dude, so you're going to run the full pull, right? So you're at every NHRA this season. We'll wrap up here momentarily, but there's a couple of huge, like, monumental happenings in the sport of drag racing that we would be remiss not to touch on. We're going to lose Bandimere Speedway, it would appear, the final running of the Mile High Nationals coming up this summer out there on Thunder Mountain outside of Denver, Colorado. This was seismic news in our industry. That venue certainly holds a place in our heart, home of the World Series of Pro Mod for 3 years, where that seed was planted. But I know it also holds a special place in your heart, where you made your first competition passes in a Top Fuel Dragster and kind of embarked on this whole new chapter of your life. So, I mean, thoughts? I mean, were you surprised? There had been rumblings of this for a hot minute, but it still was kind of, it was a big deal, a big moment to hear it absolutely actually announced.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, there were some rumblings about it even towards, you know, the middle of last year. That being said, at that time, those rumblings were we would still get two more, you know? And so I, at that time, I kind of wrote it off as, you know, like that sucks, but that's, you know, going to be next year's problem. And just kind of passed it off. And once it came out recently, it was a bummer. And, you know, just in complete hearsay, not to spread rumors, even though here we are on a podcast, I'm going to say it to however many people, there was talk that they were building a brand new state-of-the-art facility to replace it out close to the airport. They didn't want to close the current track down until that one was done. At this point, I don't know if that's still going through, if there's enough time to get that completed, or if they have any interest in doing it. But also with that said, you know, the Bandimere family, they've had a heck of a run, you know,
awesome
and,
family. Awesome.
You know, what are they supposed to do? You know, everybody is just like, how could they do this to all of us? You know, and like, we're all the victims, but like the thing that what they provided for so many years is something that we wouldn't have had in the first place. And so, you know, thank you to them for everything that they've contributed.
I mean, yeah. If you think about 65 years of continuous or essentially continuous operation, the place was closed down, like, while they rebuilt it there at one point. But to have been around for that long, like, there are few Fortune 500 businesses last anywhere remotely last half that long. So if you think about the significance of 65 years, nearly seven decades putting on drag races, I'm kind of with you. As exciting or cool as it would be to see a new venue or whatever, I don't know that you could really argue with them kind of riding off into the sunset. I mean, their contribution to the sport, I think it's widely known that that's like the best operated racetrack on the planet. In a conversation with two or three other facilities, maybe. What more do they have to prove, right? And I know they're doing the Lord's work, and there's a lot of levels, a lot of layers to that onion out there. It's more than just providing a place to go race. But man, they have done a lot for the sport. And I'm to your point, Alex, I don't think anybody can begrudge them for doing what they were going to be forced to do. I mean, I remember the first time I went out there, you couldn't see a house. The next time I went, you could see a few. The next time I went, you could see a whole bunch. And it has just intensified. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of what comes next. I personally wouldn't be surprised to see them sail away. But who knows? You know, who knows what the future holds? I was wondering to myself, if this isn't the universe shortening the NHRA schedule. You know what I mean? Because I've thought, you hear scuttlebutt, or you've heard racers talk about for years and years and years, it's like, oh, long. We need less races. There's too many events. This feels like a Houston goes away, Denver goes away. We're down to 19 races. You know, you're one tough decision away from the 18 race schedule that racers have been begging for years. So I don't know, man. Interesting to me.
Yeah. And everything has a lifespan, you know, businesses, real estate, people, and the family has done so much. Like, dude, like, let them sell it. Let them put a bunch of money in the bank and sail off into the sunset. Like you said, like, they've done so much for the sport. Like, now it's their time to do what they want.
It's true. Yeah, I agree. And recoup that investment. I mean, how much money have they spent on that facility over the years, carving it into the side of a mountain? So yeah, I mean, they've done so much and continued to improve it, even probably up to last year, knowing that this was coming. So yeah, hats off to them, and whatever they want to do, it's they have the right to do it for sure.
Yep, 100%, man. Well, Alex, dude, it's been great catching up. We're so happy to see you out here still rocking and rolling, going drag racing, doing burnouts and making noise for all of us. I guess we'll see you this weekend at the NHRA 4-Wide Nationals in Charlotte. Be safe. But what look do we have for the weekend?
Back to the Haviland colored funny car. But for the first time ever, I am bringing my own rain boots, because the weather doesn't look super good. I've gone to Walmart too many times out there to buy rain boots, and so I'm gonna already packed my gear bag.
Good, bring them because that means it won't rain if you're all geared up with rain gear.
Where were you at when you had the little remote control? When you had the remote control boat, was that
Gainesville?
Gainesville.
Yeah.
Remember that Toyota truck that was sunk out there? Oh my goodness! Yeah, that was hilarious. A deal, dude! Like, it was up to the luggage rack, like underwater. Unbelievable. All right, guys. Yeah, come on out, T. I invited him this weekend, and he's.
I know. I'm my daughter has.
I got that thing, prom. You know.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter does have a prom, so I got to go to Grand March. But I'm in the doghouse. There was a little bit of time before Grand March, and I found the golf tournament to get into before it. My wife is not happy, you know. So I guess
he did this at his niece's wedding last year.
I did.
And barely showed up to the wedding. So, anyways, guys. Hey, Alex, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, thank all of y'all for tuning in each and every Wednesday. I hope you enjoy this new conversational format of the show. I know that it's, for me, I think we're hitting home here. So thank you guys a ton. Alex, be safe, brother. Good luck. Appreciate you, dude.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.